This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another edition of Pop Goes the Classics here on the Pop Experience. I am one of your tri-hosts, Steve Riddle, and this is episode 40 of our journey trekking through the entire Disney film canon. Hard to believe we've been through that many episodes, but I mean, we've covered a lot of films. We still got some great ones still to come. Don't know if I can say that about our film we're going to talk about today, but we'll obviously get into it and get kind of do the deep dive as we usually do. Of course, let me first bring in my fellow tri-hosts to do so. First, all the way on the East Coast, where hopefully it's not as cold as it has been the last couple of times we've done this. I know we are a few days away from the first day of spring, but it is Mr. Andy Atherton. Andy, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Steve, and it wouldn't be a podcast, you know, without talking about the weather. Thank you for asking. It is actually a nice day today. We're eking up into the 50s and 60s quite a few times here. It still does get chilly at night, but it's a nice, pretty sunny day here in lower Connecticut. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited to talk about this movie a little bit because it's part of my Disney blind spot. You know, because I was, you know, at the part of my life what that was happening at this moment, you know, these few films and these years here, kind of, I wasn't like going to see them. I just had, you know, Jessica was a baby at this time. She was about a year and a half when this came out. So it's still, you know, I'm going back and almost kind of fresh eyes with some of these films, but. I'm interested to talk about this because it's not a movie that is talked about actually that much in the canon.
We're kind of in this little stretch here of these like kind of forgettable type of films. You know, we talked about Treasure Planet last month, and of course we got, you know, the film we're going to talk about next month, which not, you know, that's going to be an interesting one to talk about. But first, we got to get through this film, and we got to, of course, do it with our third member here, all the way halfway around the world in the Czech Republic. It is Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you, Steve? How are you?
I'm good. It's I got some. Since we're talking about weather, I got some nice weather here. It was kind of a little bit more chilly these last few days. We did hit a little bit of rain, but I think we're looking at some 70s for the rest of the week. So it is going to be nice spring weather. So what about you?
So it's still pretty cold or cold-ish in the evenings. Like it's 36 right now, but today it was like high of 52, and with the sun shining, it was warm. So I mean, I think we're getting there. I think it's almost warm time.
Yeah, and it's funny we talk about, you know, the cold because the film we're talking about today takes us to an area that is pretty cold. Obviously, that's the Great White North. And that is because we're going to be talking about, as I said, the 44th film in the Disney film canon, and that is Brother Bear. This film was released originally on November 1st, 2003 in the U.S. Kind of funny note, though, when I was going through my research on this, this film was supposed to be released in the spring of 2004, and our next film that we talk about was supposed to be released in 2003, and they end up flip-flopping them, I should say.
So that's sometimes fast.
Exactly. The rumor was that the next one we talk about was going through rewrites, but eventually it was determined that the reason they flipped was because they wanted to have this film to be promoted on the Platinum Edition release of The Lion King, which came out around that same time. So whatever reason, we get this film here instead. I know I did not see this film in theaters. I probably didn't even remember seeing a lot of ads for it on TV. By this point, I just graduated from high school that June, and I was kind of in the midst of, you know, working some odd jobs before I was going off to college the next semester. So I was kind of like Andy said about how this was his Disney dark period. It was kind of similar for me as well. And that would kind of go for the next couple of years. But Miranda, what are your kind of first early memories about Brother Bear? Did you see it in theaters, or when was the first time you did see it?
I did not see it in theaters. I'm kind of like you guys. This also is a time period for me. I graduated in 2003. So in November of 2003, I would have been like in the middle of my senior years with like I was part of like multiple clubs and had like responsibility and a job and things like that. So, and I was also a nanny. And a lot of the movies that I saw during this time period are if those kids that I nannied wanted to go see it or if the family asked me to go with them. And I don't remember this being one that I was ever asked to see. My brothers are also 3 and 5 years younger than me. So they still would have been like where their friends thought it was uncool to go to a movie, but secretly they all did. They didn't ask me to go to this one either. So I think we're all three kind of in this like, as you both said, like a dark period, only because it was like times in our life. Like Andy had a small baby. You and I were, you know, trying to figure out how we were starting lives as very young adults. Like we all three had like a lot of responsibility during these next few movies. So maybe that's why they just are kind of they're kind of forgettable. Well, I'm not going to say bad, there's a few of them that are forgettable.
Well, I was still, like seeing, you know what it was, when you're busy or you're at the time of your life, you need a, like, it has to be a strong reason to go to the theater.
Right? Yes.
So if we, one thing, you know, we maybe could talk about a little bit too, is that, you know, we're in a point period now, you know, we've been here for a little while, this period I'm about to say is Disney's no longer the only game in town, right? In terms of animation. We had a lot of other studios coming into the forefront. So there are a lot more choices for animated movies. And so, you know, people, you know, vote with their dollars in terms of what they want to see. Like, and I do remember seeing Finding Nemo, and that came out earlier that year in 2003. I mean, you look at Rugrats Go Wild came out that year, Sinbad, Looney Tunes Back in Action, and The Triplets of Belleville, even though it's not really a kid animation. That movie did win the Oscar for best. Yeah. I believe it won the Oscar. I've actually never seen it. I've seen bits and pieces of it. But that's another thing to take into consideration with some of these films. It was like, you know, like that's why I didn't really see Treasure Planet. That's why I didn't see
this. Well, and not just animated either.
Yeah. Like,
remind me, because you guys I may have to Google this, but isn't this also about the time frame that, and we've talked about this movie before, but I think we've just gotten Shrek shortly before this, which is animated, but isn't this also when we're getting like, we're starting to get like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Black Hawk Down, and there's a lot happening, especially for the age group that we were all in at that time. Not to say that, obviously we've discussed a lot of movies here that we went and saw in the theaters that were animated and we enjoyed them. So I'm not saying like we weren't watching them anymore, but our sights were also in different directions when it came to going to the movies. And for all of us, for different reasons, money, you only had so much money. So you had to make clear decisions when your friends or whoever said, let's go to the theater. I mean, we were complaining about theater prices now. We won't talk about what they are or then, but we won't talk about what they are now. But then that was, you know, we really had to pay attention where our $5.50 went. That was a whole hour of work for me and Steve.
You're right. You hit right on the head. Like Harry Potter was out. Star Wars, the prequels were coming out. I mean, we're still like five years away from the MCU, but like, they were starting to, you know, there was a lot more options, a lot more choices in the theater.
And we were older to go to more options as well.
Yeah. And I think another thing about this recent period that I kind of notice as I'm looking at the list here, it's kind of like, this is very boy skewing the last few years for the most part. Like Emperor's New Groove was, you know, if you look, you know, you could probably say it might appeal to boys a little bit more than girls because there's no princess, right? You know what I mean? Like girls don't need a princess, but Cusco, you know, a young kid could probably relate to Cusco a bit. You know, you had Atlantis, Treasure Planet, Brother Bear, all kind of, you know, and it even kind of continues a little bit with Chicken Little, Meet the Robinsons, and Bolt. You know, Home on the Range obviously is not, but so that's kind of like another maybe, I want to say reason for maybe the decline a little bit, but, you know, it just seemed like they were not going for that, these movies weren't four quadrant, so to speak. Like, and there's not a lot of them that are, but this didn't. These seem to be a little bit more on what, you know, little boys would be more apt to go see. I mean, we would go when my kids were little. Like, you know, we would go see almost everything as animated for the most part, just because it was like, you know, entertain, especially in the summer. You know, keep them in the cool theater.
In the summer, it's really cheap.
Yeah, they do those screenings and things like that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So that could be another reason for this period for Disney, at least. And there was also transitions going on, too, from what I understand, right? I think John Lasseter was starting to kind of come on board. That's when they were kind of getting out of the Michael Eisner years and trying to get away from the direct-to-video sequels and things like that. They really were in kind of a, I don't want to say a lost period, but it was like they were not aimless, but there was a lot of transitions
going
on.
They were trying to decide basically.
And times were changing, so they don't really course correct for a little bit, because we may enjoy a few of the next movies after the next one, but they weren't as big as the ones that follow that. And you could pretty much figure out why, you know, Princess and the Frog, Tangled, Ralph, Frozen, why those were massive hits, because of the appeal across, you know, whether it's boy, girl, young, old, they had that. And a lot of these movies are missing some of the targets, you know what I mean? So that's kind of what I was trying to get to with talking about this period, at least for Disney films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, like you said, this is definitely, calling it a lost period is actually really is a good description of it. Mm-hmm. Considering, like you said, all the choices that were around at that time. So
the dark years.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, to, of course, go into the film here, we are set here in the post-Ice Age Alaska. So we're kind of still the early days, you know, early days of humans, but we still see kind of like, you know, there's woolly mammoths and all those other different type of animals that are no longer around. The film opens with a elderly man named Danahi, who begins to tell the story about his younger brother, who wanted to become a man and had to do so in perhaps the most unlikeliest of way. We then cut to when he is a younger man. We meet him and his two brothers, of course, Kanai, who's the main character here, along with Sitka, their older brother. They're kind of, you know, they're getting ready to get some salmon. And of course, Kanai is about to receive his totem shaman woman of the tribe, Tanana, who has communicated with the great spirits, kind of symbolized through the Northern Lights. And during this time, we all hear the first of what will be a couple of songs we hear. That's Great Spirits, performed by the iconic Tina Turner. We then see them return to their village as all the villagers kind of gather around. The kids are going with Kanai as he's kind of talking about what totem he's going to receive. And then he has to tie up the salmon to this tree in his little basket to keep it away from bears. But as we see, he does not do it properly. The basket ends up falling on the ground. He kind of realizes it, but then he just kind of like, yeah, I'll leave it, and just walks away. Clearly not going to regret that decision. As everyone again gathers together under this little cave, and Tanana kind of holds court for this little ceremony. But we'll stop there for a second. So, Andy, what did you think of this little this introduction here to some of our characters? And we talk about voice actors, and someone I think a lot of people may not realize was in a Disney film at one point, Joaquin Phoenix, is Kenai here. He was kind of starting to hit his peak. He had just come off Gladiator a few years ago. He was 2 years away from Walk the Line. And then we also have, Jason Reyes as Danahi and D.B. Sweeney as Sitka, to kind of fill out the three brothers here. And then Joan Copeland as Tanana. Again, what did you think of the kind of intro to the film? What did you think of Great Spirits as a song and the choice of voice actors here?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix, you wouldn't think, did a Disney film, but he could have probably done this a few years ago, probably record this stuff around the time like Gladiator or whatever had come out. And then the rest of the, most of the voice cast are not as recognizable names, like D.B. Sweeney. You know, he's been in plenty of things. He was Dexter Rutecki in that, what the hell that movie was. I remember that's where I saw him from. But he's been, you know, Cutting Edge. What was that other movie? He did a run on Two and a Half Men for a while. I mean, we got Michael Clark Duncan later, which is very exciting. I mean, the voice cast is fine. I mean, the real stars of the voice cast we haven't met yet in this film. And we'll get to that when you talk about them. I really enjoyed the animation of the Northern Lights. It's funny too. It's like, you think about this, it's like, okay, I could picture them in the, you know, pitch meetings. Like, where haven't we set an animated film yet? Okay. We haven't done it in like the cold or up in the Inuit. We haven't hit that yet. So that I could see where they were trying to maybe find a new, locale. So I thought the Caribou Stampede was pretty cool, reminiscent of Jurassic Park. I really did enjoy the showing of the relationship between the three brothers. The Great Spirits montage, it captured the setting and the world. And I don't know if it's Kenai, not happy with the getting to, I think we haven't gotten there with, he hasn't gotten his token yet. So, they set the tone of the movie and kind of what it is about. It's, you know, it's kind of like the opposite of what we're going to get in Frozen, because Frozen, you know, when we get there, it's really a love story, but a love story of two sisters. This is, if you want to break this down to a love story, you'd say it's a love story of brothers and how Kenai ends up having several or more than one set of brothers, I guess, so to speak. So I was really starting to get into where this was going. So I was in. I thought they really set the film up good here to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ken, I learned the hard way about never trying to milk a caribou leading to that stampede. Miranda, what did you think of this opening intro here? What did you think of the song Great Spirits and the voices we hear?
I enjoyed it. I think the voices were, they're fine choices. I'm not saying they're like great voice actors or horrible. I think they did a good job. I really enjoyed the spirits and how they kind of are like the form of like an aura kind of. I really enjoy that. Tina Turner surprises you. Like when you're like, oh, we're making a Disney song, let's get Tina Turner. But it works. Mm-hmm. Works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So like I said, we do go to the ceremony here, and Kenai is presented with his totem. As Tanana says, it is symbolizes one of the greatest emotions you can have, that being love, as she presents him with a bear totem, much to his chagrin, because he thinks that bears are nothing but thieves. They can't show love. We then learn that Sitka had gotten the eagle of guidance, while Danahi got the wolf of wisdom. And again, Sitka trying to be kind of the voice of reason, saying that, Kenai just needs to learn how to, how to follow love and grow with it to become a man, so that he can add his handprint to their little wall there, of their wall of ancestors who left their handprints behind. We then see that, as expected, a bear has come and stolen all the salmon from the basket that Kenai did not tie up properly. So he, of course, decides that he's going to try to make up for it by going after the bear, while Danahi and Sitka kind of tail behind him. Kenai does find the basket, and then he sees the bear, which he goes after. But that proves to be near fatal. He's knocked off this ledge, only for Sitka to save him. Danahi then tries to fight off the bear, but he ends up falling through a crack there in the glacier that they're fighting on. And Kenai then goes to save him, while Sitka fights off the bear. He then sees the bear try to go after Denahi and Kenai, so he ends up sacrificing himself by using his spear to break apart the glacier, causing him and the bear to fall into a nearby river. We see that the bear ultimately does survive, but sadly, as we know, Sitka does not. Kenai and Denahi then go down to the river to try to find him, but all they find is his pelt. As they realize that he has not made it. So, kind of playing up the tension here. And we've now got our first loss in the film, as we do end up losing Sitka to this as he plays the hero to, you know, and sacrifices himself. Miranda, what did you think of this kind of little sequence here about Kenai getting his totem? Obviously not realizing what it means, and the their kind of fight with the bear and the loss of Sitka.
I think not understanding what the totem means, that's kind of like not understanding exactly what life means at that point. So I thought it was a good little, I guess, analogy, or at least for me, maybe somebody took it a different way. God forbid Disney not have someone die. That's just unacceptable for someone to not die. That's sad, though. I do remember I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I do remember that when I did, I was not happy. So.
Yeah, definitely Lion King vibes at times in this.
Right?
Yeah.
Listen, if someone is not gonna die, or someone's parents are not already dead, is it a Disney movie?
No, I don't think so.
No. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, Andy, what did you think of this the sequence here and the leading up to the death of Sitka?
Well, I mean, you know, definitely not happy with his token, because it's like, I'm a love bear. Is that like, it's like a typical, like, you know, I want like a tough animal. I don't want to be, you know, I mean, a bear is tough, but like the kind of what goes with the bear, he's not exactly happy. You know, a little laziness on his part, you know, and ends up costing Sitka's life, if you kind of think about it, because if he didn't do that, the bear wouldn't have been able to get into the fish, the salmon, whatever, and then they wouldn't have had to go on chasing him down to like get taking care of things. Yeah, the sacrifice by Sitka was pretty. I thought it was really amazing, but yeah, very sad. I think the bear does die here, though. I think with Kenai getting pretty lucky with the bear basically impaling himself on his spear here, right? Is that what we're talking about?
No, we haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet. Okay, sorry.
Disregard.
Disregard. Strike that from the record. But yeah, that'll be a future Andy will say that. but I mean, you have to set up some tragedy to have the journey really start. I think that's kind of the trope of Disney, I guess, and that's what we're seeing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we then go. They hold Sitka's funeral, and then Kenai, completely filled with, you know, with rage or revenge, decides to go after the bear. Denahi tries to stop him, but Kenai's not having it as he throws his totem away. Tanana just then gives it to Denahi, who then says he has to stop Kenai, and then Tanaha just kind of laments that Sitka left too soon. We see Kenai then kind of on the hunt, and he eventually finds the bear, chases through the glacier up a mountain, and with Denahi kind of right behind them. They reach the top of the mountain there, where Kenai and the bear end up fighting, and then as you tease there, the bear does end up being killed by Kenai as he holds his spear up just at the right moments. Unfortunately, this does not please the spirits, who then come around to where Kenai and the bear are. At one point, we do see Sitka, who is now the spirit of an eagle. He kind of looks on with a very disapproving look, knowing that Kenai is screwed up. And as punishment, he ends up turning Kenai into a bear, and then also takes the other bear, lifts that up into the spirits. Just as Denahi shows up, he sees Kenai now as a bear. He thinks that he's the one that's the bear that killed Kenai, not realizing it is Kenai. And Kanai ends up falling off the mountain into a river and gets washed away as Danahi kind of sees him go away. He then finds his he has the bear totem, as I said. He then wraps it around his spear as he basically now vows to get revenge on the bear, thinking that it has killed Kanai. So saying Kanai all the time. But anyway, Andy, what did you think of this the sequence here? Kanai killing the bear and Sitka basically, like I said, punishing him by turning him into a bear.
I mean, it was kind of harrowing here to see this. I mean, the guy was definitely grieving and did feel like responsible for Sitka's death. And, mm-hmm. Like I said, the bear, he got really lucky there because the bear was about to, you know, finish him off. And he just happened to have some good timing and some luck there. I think, I'm looking at the clock on this. A lot of times you kind of wonder how long it takes to get into things. And this is fairly quick for a Disney movie to kind of get us moving, you know, with the real inciting incident, I guess, of the movie, and this was 22 minutes in, so I kind of appreciated that, you know, that they didn't linger too much. They really got us into the story here. I mean, Sitka's spirit, you know, he's been on the other side for like a cup of coffee, but he's sitting there and leading that transformation, I think. And then the thing I would really think about, though, poor Danahi, whatever his name is, thinks that his other brother was killed by a bear as well. So the guy just lost two brothers in his mind to killer bears, so to speak. So you could definitely feel for that character, although we're not going to, you know, spend as much time with him. But I definitely think they really tried to hit you with some emotional punches early on in this movie before we get into some of the more comedic aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, at one point, there was the one point where Danahi basically kind of saying it without saying it, saying that it was Kanai's fault that Sitka was killed. So,
yeah.
Kind of again playing up the guilt that Kanai feels about Sitka's death. So, Miranda, what did you think of this sequence here and Kanai being turned into a bear?
I very much agree with you and Andy that they're trying to like pull at your heartstrings at this point. And I get it, though. Like, the whole why he would go after the bear. So it makes total sense to me. But this whole time I was wondering if you just real quick, like first thing that comes to your head, what do you think your little like spirit animal would be? What would yours be? Cause he's angry that his totem is a bear, right? So what would yours be, you think, Steve?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that one.
He was like, I was not expecting this question.
I don't know what it would be. I have to think about that. What would yours be?
I feel like I'm an old crow.
I this is probably something Miranda probably has thought long and hard about at several times in her life. So, it was my understanding there'd be no questions about what your spirit animal totem would be on this podcast today. So
yes, sorry folks, this is what a true ADHD brain looks like. But I need to know, Andy, real quick, what
I mean. Yours? I don't know. I think maybe a dog.
Or, okay, I'll give you.
Or a wolf. I mean, just because I don't know.
You'd be in the canine family of some sort.
I would be definitely
fox
be a canine
or a wolf or
something. Okay. Depends. At different times in my life, you could probably have called me any of those. A wolf, a fox.
Coyote, oh, Jesus. No, it just made me wonder. Of course, this is something I have put a lot of deep thought into, which, but it's just, he's like angry, right? That this is the choice. And that's kind of like the whole part of the movie is like, there's these spirits and all creatures are created through spirits. So it just made me wonder.
Well, anytime you have this kind of thing in a movie, you think of the comedy Couples Retreat when they get their animals and like, you know, one couple gets wolf, another one gets a honeybee, Another one gets, I forgot what the they got. One other couple got, but then like, what do we get? We're going to get this. We're going to get that. He goes, you get the ass. The ass is loyal. The ass is this. So there's always some kind of disappointment when you get your spirit animal on somebody, at least. You know, always feels like
it's like in Harry Potter getting a Patronus. People being like,
I wanted a stag and I got a bunny.
I got a blackbird. So see, hence I am an old crow.
Oh, that's good. Well, we do continue on here. We see that Kanai has made it to the shore where Tanana is healing him. Of course, he's trying to explain what's going on, but obviously since he's a bear, she doesn't understand him. She does tell him that if he wants to turn back to normal, he must go to the mountains where the lights touch it, so that he can talk to his brother and atone for his actions. Then she disappears. Kenai then kind of realizes that he can actually speak to the animals as he runs into a pair of moose brothers named Rut and Took. He tries to get them. He asks them where he needs to go, but they kind of go back and forth with each other and don't really give him relevant information. He then walks away, but then gets caught in a bear trap. Where he ended up meeting a young cub named Coda, who ends up saving him from the trap, much to his kind of chagrin, because he wanted to do it himself. Is at that moment they then see Danahi, who is on the hunt for them. They make their way into a little glacier cave where they're able to kind of give him the slip. And this is when Coda tells him that he had gotten separated from his mother as they were on their way to a salmon run. And he wanted Kanai to help him get to the salmon run in exchange for saving him. Kanai tries to go back on his word, but Coda ends up telling him that the salmon run just happens to be right next to the mountain where Kanai needs to go. So Kanai reluctantly agrees to take Coda to the salmon run so that he can get to the mountain. So we got a couple more good characters here. Like I said, we got Coda, who's portrayed by Jeremy Suarez. And then we get, of course, Rut and Took, portrayed by Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas. They kind of become our little comedic foils throughout the remainder of the film here. So, Miranda, what did you think of this sequence here where Kanai now realizes what he has to do to become human again, as well as the introductions of Coda and Rut and Took?
Well, honestly, I think this is probably, in my opinion, one of the best parts or better parts, only because what I did remember of this movie before going into a rewatch is I did remember Coda and I did remember Rut and Took. So that, to me, speaks volumes that is a pivotal moment, apparently, in my brain, because that's what characters I remembered. So I actually really enjoyed this part.
Andy?
Rut and Took, I remember them from the ads and all the things. And this is going to age me probably, but I was popping big time that it was Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas, because I don't know if you guys know or ever watched SCTV, like the original SCTV from like the late 70s, early 80s that I think they showed on Comedy Central years ago. Mm-hmm. And Rick and Dave, they portrayed Bob and Doug McKenzie. These two brothers, mm-hmm. very Canadian, very hosers, you know, that's why the accents are there with them. And they say a lot. And they did the show The Great White North. And that's why at the end of the last episode, I did coo wee coo 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 coo, because that was their call they would do on the show. And I really, so they basically were playing Bob and Doug McKenzie as Wolf, as sure. Moose. So, yeah, because they're very, very Canadian. The only thing missing from Canadian would have been like if they had a third one voiced by Martin Short. So, I did like that Tanana, you know, we needed exposition. So Tanana had to know about, you know, Kanai's transformation and ended up, getting him started on his journey. Coda, you know, reminds me a little bit of Simba, young Simba, at least.
Oh, I was just say that. Yeah. There's a lot of similarities, like, in this part to Lion King, especially the whole, like, the light touches. I was like, I think we heard this before.
Yeah, there was some derivative bits and pieces to this, and we kind of have the, I guess, the ticking clock of Danai kind of hunting him because, you know, it's like he's there's stakes that have been raised in this. So looking forward to seeing, you know, either he makes it to the end or he mistakenly may get killed by his own brother. There's some pretty high stakes here. So so we'll see how the journey takes us. And I'm all here for Rut and Tuke as our little our comedic sidekicks.
Yeah, they do provide some good fodder here. So, so as we say, Kenai and Koda are on their way through the forest, trying to make their way toward the mountain. Of course, Kenai is immediately annoyed by Koda, who's constantly chattering throughout the entire time. We then get another song here that's on My Way, performed by Phil Collins. So Phil Collins, who, of course, if you remember, did the music for Tarzan, is brought back here to do the soundtrack for this film. So good little get there for them. Eventually, Kenai and Koda end up running into Rut and Tuke again, who tell them about Danahi, who they had seen not that long ago. So they decide they need to kind of cover their tracks. So they end up hitching rides on a pack of woolly mammoths who are kind of just moving through. As we get through that sequence there. At one point, Koda can't remember which way to go, so Kenai gets frustrated with them. They end up falling into kind of making their way towards what was at one point like a little makeshift housing ground for other humans, because they do see kind of portraits on the side of the rocks there. And at one point, Kenai sees a picture of a human hunting a bear, and of course it kind of resonates with him because this is what he's going through. And eventually he and Koda kind of come back together. They're kind of, and we see them starting to form, as you said, a brotherly bond. They at one point they do, they're kind of going on the mountains and they find this pair of rams who are kind of going back, just kind of going at each other. Then they end up, you know, kind of just yelling at their echoes before walking away. As Koda says that he's remembered the way to go. They eventually make their way towards what looks like a kind of a little lava pit that they kind of tiptoe their way through. But it's at that moment that Danahi arrives and he chases after them. Kenai and Koda manage to cross over this log, spanning this like big chasm, and they manage to get through before Danahi pushes the log away to try to kill Kenai, but he's not able to. Danahi then at one point actually jumps the chasm and makes it to the log to go after them, but the log ends up giving way, falling into the river there. Though if you do notice, Kenai tried to stop the log from doing so to save Danahi, but he's not able to. And of course, he thinks that the Danahi is has not made it, so he and Koda just keep moving on. So Miranda, what did you think of this kind of sequence here? What'd you think of "On My Way" as a song, and as we see the growing bond here between Kenai and Koda?
Well, I think it's important that we see the bond between Kenai and Koda because it's trying to prove a point, right? So I really enjoy that that's kind of developing, and it wasn't just I don't know what I'm trying to say, but that it wasn't just blah. Phil Collins works for me. I feel like he is someone that when you say Disney movie, it makes sense that you hear his name. So I really enjoyed that piece as well. Overall, I thought this was one of those like filler but done well parts of the movie. Like it's needed, but it's basically filler to get us where we have to go.
Yeah. It's since there's a lot of traveling, it's always good to have a song to kind of do the exposition for it. Mm-hmm. And we get more kind of, you know, little bits with Rut and Tuke as they're like, one of them's like driving the mammoth, the other's kind of laying in the background. They're kind of, and he's like, he had some good lines like, you know, me laying back here makes it like you hunted me, or like, you know, don't be a backseat driver, that sort of thing. So, so we got that there. Andy, what did you think of this sequence here? What did you think of "On My Way" as a song, and like I said, the growing bond with Kenai and Koda?
Yeah, I mean, "On My Way" was good. Typical Disney travel montage song. I love the traveling by mammoth part. I have to think there a lot of the Rotten Tooth might have been improvised as we're going, because I think it kind of comes off that way to me, at least. You know, I do like the bonding here, because they both have just suffered loss, although Porta doesn't really know he's really suffered loss yet. He just seems like he's lost. He like doesn't know like his mom is gone. But I do like the bonding here, because it's starting to show Kanai how the other half lives, so to speak, where when Coda refers to humans, man, as monsters, because they see it from that perspective. I mean, we're all just trying to, at this point in history of, you know, civilization, they're just trying to live. They're trying to survive. And bears are just doing the same thing. They're not man killers. They're not man eaters. You know, they're trying to just get to where the salmon is. Right. I mean, I did like the rams here arguing with themselves. That was a fun bit here. And then, you know, the whole thing where Kanai is trying not to fight Danai. He's really trying to, you know, live in two worlds, so to speak. And he's kind of lost in both. So, you know, we're trying. That's part of what this journey is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you talk about it because, like, as Kanai and Coda are traveling at one point, Kanai's trying to, you know, say all bears are bad. But Coda's like, you know, nope, like, bears aren't bad. It's the humans that are bad. So, like you said, trying to kind of play off the whole, like, you know, both species trying to survive and, you know, misunderstanding the one and the other. Because remember, the whole point of this was, you know, was Kanai thinking that, you know, bears can't love. So, so this is kind of him realizing that, you know, well, you know, maybe they can, because he is, like we said, he's, you know, he's growing this relationship with Coda. So, it is an interesting kind of dynamic there. But eventually, Kanai and Coda do end up making it to the salmon run, where they meet up with a whole bunch of other bears, kind of led by the old grizzly bear Tug, and who we mentioned him, portrayed by Michael Clark Duncan. They kind of realize that they've never seen Kanai before, so he tries his best to blend in, and this is where we get another song, "Welcome to Our Family," as Kanai sees all the bears having fun at the run, as they're also all getting their salmon, and this is where he actually he becomes accepted by the other bears, even though they've never seen him before. We then kind of cut to where they're all having like their own little story time. All kind of sharing their little stories. You get the elderly female bear who says that she lost her husband, even though the husband keeps yelling off screen that he's still alive. We get the young bear couple who are falling in love, and then of course Kanai tells his story about basically him and Coda traveling through the wilderness to get to that point. Of course, he's kind of, you know, knocking Coda, and then Coda starts telling his story about his mother who he had been with her, and they were, you know, collecting salmon, but then she ends up getting separated from him as she goes off finding these hunters. And that's when Kanai realizes that the bear that they were fighting, and that the bear that he eventually killed, was Coda's mother. And of course he gets immediately, feels very guilty about that. So he ends up running off. While Coda's, you know, finishing up the story, and he says that that's when he mentions about he and his mother got separated. So, Andy, what did you think of this kind of sequence here, the introduction to the other bears, the song, and the realization for Kanai that he pretty much done screwed up?
Yeah. I mean, the song was fine. I do love having Michael Clark Duncan's big, burly voice as Tug here. The alpha male of the pack. And I did enjoy Kanai learning all about bears, being part of, the bear pack, so to speak. And the realization as it comes on him is pretty heavy, that he actually killed this little cub's mother. You know, he wasn't, I mean, it was alpha revenge and all that, but he's got more guilt on his head, because he feels like to blame for Sitka's death. He feels about, you know, how Danai's probably, you know, how he's grieving right now. And now he, you know, made this little bear an orphan, pretty much. I mean, yes, there's this big pack that's a family, but, you know, the mother-cub bonding relationship there is that's unbreakable. And he's also kind of a bumbling bear, which he's not. Humphrey, one of the old Disney bears. He's not Humphrey bumbling, but he's definitely showing his lack of experience as living like a bear, because he ain't doing so good here. So, but it's starting to, things are starting to fall into place in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we've seen it plenty of times in these films where like a human gets transformed into an animal, and their like first few days as that animal doesn't go well for them as they try to adjust to their new life. Miranda, what did you think of the sequence? What did you think of the song, and what did you think of again the realization? Can I realizing that he did something extremely bad?
I think we were leading up to this, right? We knew that he was going to have that realization, or that he should have that realization. So getting there, I feel, was pleasant, even though it was kind of also sad in the same regard. The song was fine. This is one of those films, listen, I know I keep saying the songs are fine, but like I didn't remember them. And I feel like it wasn't a bad song. It wasn't like, oh, I hated it. But it wasn't enough that it stayed in my memory bank as other songs that were not good have over the years. So that tells me that, like, it wasn't that gripping song that kids sing for years and years and years like they do with, like, you know, Elsa and some others.
I can tell you that, and I, you know, as a Disney nerd, a Disney adult, whatever you want to say, I have Disney hits on all the time. I listen to it like when I clean, you know, just because it's like, you know, puts you in a nice mood. But I have never heard a song from Brother Bear on Disney.
I don't think I have either.
So that could kind of tell you the impact, I guess, the films have. Not saying that the songs are bad, because I did like, you know, Great Spirits and On My Way, which they will be used as the beds for this podcast. But yeah, they're not. You didn't get any, you know, Can't Wait to Be King or,
right.
You know, you ain't getting that from this film. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that completely.
Yeah. And even though, again, Phil Collins, you know, it was good to have him back. It's clear that like these songs are not as memorable as the songs from like Tarzan. So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So then we see Can I by himself. On a cliff when Coda kind of runs up to him asking where he's been. Kenai then tells him he has his own story to tell Coda, and as he says it's about a man, about a bear, but mainly about a monster. And we get our kind of last song here again from Phil is No Way Out, as Kenai reveals to Coda that it was him that killed his mother. Coda obviously very distraught, runs away as Kenai goes after him. Coda then climbs up into a tree to kind of disappear from Kenai. Kenai tries to explain himself. He then, and I thought it was kind of one of the best moments of the film. He kind of sees his paw in the snow, and he kind of like changes it to almost like a claw, kind of symbolizing that, you know, basically accepting that he is a monster for what he did, as he apologizes to Coda, and then goes off into the woods. We then get a brief bit of Denahi making camp, as he himself is kind of, you know, he's apologizing to Kenai for everything. Then we go to the next day, where Rut and Took are arguing about what happened with the mammoth, kind of going back and forth as they run into Coda. Coda kind of is like, you know, still distraught about what happened, and Rut and Took try to cheer him up while also still kind of arguing with each other. And then they're all over a roundabout way. They eventually make up with each other and kind of go off to do their thing, as Coda kind of basically realizes that he needs to forgive Kenai for what had happened. So, Miranda, what did you think of this little sequence here? Kenai basically confessing to Coda what had happened, and kind of the realization here from Coda that he needs to kind of, you know, not, you know, like forgive Kenai for what happened.
Sorry. I liked it. I didn't hate it. I think it's, I mean, listen, it's basically somebody coming at you being like, hey, we become good friends. I really like you. I killed your mom.
It's kind of hard to work that into the conversation.
Yeah, like, how do you... So it's awkward, especially when we're talking about a children's movie where we're like, hey, you're my friend. I killed your mom. But I think it's trying to teach both of them a lesson and trying to teach everybody, you know, not just like the hierarchy of how the food chain goes, but like walking in someone else's shoes, basically, seeing things from a different point of view. So it's a necessary part of the movie. Also, again, sad. I think that I've used that word like 4 times now. But it was, I mean, it was done well. I mean, I don't know how else you could have done it, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. Andy?
It was definitely hard. I mean, you could see Kenai struggled with it, and he had to come clean, and he knew it was going to really possibly damage or end his relationship with Coda, and who knows what could have happened after that. But the whole thing too with Danai, and he gets visited by Sitka basically with the eagle, the hawk, whatever kind of bird he is, and that kind of leads him on there. And you would never think though that the comic relief in this movie they really become the voice of reason. They show, you know, Rutten Tuke, they show Coda what being a brother is all about. Mm-hmm. And that kind of opens Coda's eyes to understand, you know, Kenai a little bit. Because, you know, Kenai has brothers. You know, Coda didn't have a brother beforehand. He may have lost his mom, but he gained a brother. So that's what he's probably starting to go through. Yeah, you would think like, you know, not the idiots, but you know, they're no Timon and Pumbaa. Let me put it that way. But they do have a decent standing in the canon of sidekicks, because they provide good karmic relief, but then, you know, they in their own way kind of help the story and help the characters learn more about themselves and realize, you know, the real stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So Kenai makes it to the mountain. He calls out for Sika to help him. He thinks he sees Sika coming towards him, but it ends up being Danahi. They have another fight. Danahi looks like he's about to kill Kenai, but then Coda arrives to make the save. Danahi then tries to go after Coda, but Kenai then basically sacrifices himself to save Coda. Sitka then appears. He ends up, he turns Kenai back into a human. Danahi then realizes what has gone on as he's very obviously remorseful. Sitka then appears and lets Kenai know that, you know, you did the right thing by doing that. Kenai then goes in his human form to Coda, and Coda realizes who it is, so they embrace. Kenai then realizes that Coda will still need him, and he lets Sika change him back into a bear with Danai's blessing, as he says that he and Kenai will always be brothers no matter what he looks like. Coda is then briefly reunited with his mother, who returns to him as a spirit. So they get their little closure. We see the brothers kind of embrace each other, kind of in their new forms. Yeah, Sika as a spirit, Kenai as a once again as a bear, and Danahi still as a human. And then we close out with the with one more little ceremony at the with the tribe there, as Kenai is officially become a man. He puts his paw on the side of the rock there with all the other handprints, officially joining their ancestors, and that brings us to a close as Danahi was narrating through it all, saying that Kenai and Coda would stay together while also kind of integrating with the tribe. So that brings us to the closing credits, and we get some like little bonus scenes there at the end, mainly with Rutten Tuke kind of continuing, you know, bringing in some more comic relief. And then we eventually fade away to the credits. So Andy, what did you think of this final kind of scene here, the final fight with Danahi and Coda, Kenai, everything kind of coming back around full circle? and everything eventually kind of, you know, leading to where it is, where everybody is able to live happily ever after, basically.
Yeah, it was pretty harrowing for a moment, because you don't know if, you know, because, I mean, Danai is going to kill Kanai or not, because, you know, he doesn't know who he is at the moment when the fight begins. I mean, Coda coming around with the run into the help, and they almost lead you to believe that Danai could kill Kanai in the same way, because he's standing there with his spear up, and you see Kanai in the air, and he was playing defense the whole time, really. And then Sitka comes in because Kanai has made his journey and learned what it's like and grown as a man, a bear, however you want to say it. I do like how, you know, Danai is like sitting there and all this is happening and his mouth is down and Sitka, like, you know, Hope closes his mouth for him. I mean, with Kanai choosing to become a bear, he realizes where he's needed more. I mean, the bond that he made with Coda is pretty remarkable, and it's not an easy choice to make, but I think it's the right choice. And they, you know, he does get, and the fact that he gets his handprint on the wall or paw print now, and who knows what the postscript would be to this story, where if bears would kind of be integrated into, you know, living a little more peacefully with the people or not. I don't know. I do know. I think there was a direct to DVD sequel for Brother Bear. I'm not sure. But I've never seen it. I don't think I want to. So I'm good with the story ending here, for me at least. But I enjoyed the ending of this film. I thought it was pretty. It was kind of special. I mean, you do see things like this. You know, you saw kind of this at the end of Shrek with Fiona and her true form and all that. This could have been Kanai's true form the whole time. I mean, who knows? It's open to interpretation, but it's a nice moment to see the three brothers bonded, you know, together one more time between the bear, the spirit, and the human. And Coda kind of gets that last little cuddle with the spirit of his mom. And, you know, it's kind of the circle of life, if you will, at times. But no, definitely, you know, it's a movie that I don't know if it had it come out at a different time, would it have done better? I don't know, but it's definitely good. Let's just say it does some things well. It doesn't do anything really bad. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't have those it moments. Those.
It doesn't have the wow.
Yeah, the wow. It's missing a wow. So, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's definitely, if somebody's listening to this pod and they've never seen Brother Bear, I would suggest seeing it. I mean, we spoiled the damn movie by this point, but, you know, it is worth a watch, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miranda?
I think it closes out pretty well. Andy kind of just, summarized it as well as I could. I agree that if you haven't seen this movie and you're like, oh, I'm on the fence, well, I won't watch it. No, I still think it is a great watch. I think if you, especially like younger kids, like, I know we just sat here and was like, it's sad. Again, that's like time number six I say that. But it's still a good Disney movie. It's not a bad one. It's just not a great one. And so overall, I think the way they ended it, I really enjoy that. It makes sense that Kanai and Coda go and, like, be brothers now. That's where his home should be. And that maybe that was, you know, foreshadowing with the totem at the beginning that he was so angry about. But I think overall it's pleasant. So to answer Andy's questions and anyone else's, there was a direct-to-DVD movie on this. Excuse me. It was direct to DVD in August of 2006. We actually had Melissa Etheridge contributing to three songs in the film. And where our first film that we just discussed was like Kanai and Coda, well, that continues. It kind of deals more with, this one focuses more on the bond with his childhood friend Nita. And what's kind of big to me is this is one of this is Rick Moranis' final role in any film before he took his break.
Oh.
Because so his voice does come back. Because not everyone came back to reprise their voice work. There was a lot of changes when it came to Brother Bear 2. But Rick Moranis came back, and it was his final role before he left acting.
Oh. You know, here's the other thing, too. There have been a lot of bears in the history of Disney films.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The bear bar, if there is one, is pretty high. Okay? Humphrey was, you know, in shorts. You know, then we had Baloo. You have Winnie the Pooh. You have the country bears. So to be a memorable bear out of a Disney character, it's pretty high. There's also that other bear that was in one of the like Make My Music or one of those anthology films. There was another little bear that was a circus bear that did. So yeah, it's hard. It's not easy to, and it just shows how difficult it is to make a hit movie. I mean, even, you know, making a good movie is one thing, but making that hit, that memorable classic, it's not easy. And nobody bats 1,000. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's funny you do say that, because this film did end up making a $250.4 million worldwide against a $46 million budget. So, you know, not too bad of a take there. Like Miranda said, we did get the sequel, Brother Bear 2, in 2006. They had originally actually planned a spinoff on for television for it to be on the Disney Channel, but that ended up that kind of fell through. And then they did do a video game release of it in I believe that's that same year in 2003. And I do not believe, I'm sure Andy would let us know if, I don't believe this film is very well represented in the parks. I know that, that the song Welcome was used as a theme for the, Parade of Dreams, during the Happiest Homecoming on Earth when they were celebrating their 50th anniversary, when Disneyland celebrated its 50th anniversary, but that was pretty much, that was pretty much it. So, and it actually did get a nomination for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards that year. It ended up losing to it was Finding Nemo that actually won the award that year, not the Triplets of Belleville. That was the other film nominated, but it did not win. So, it does have that to its credit at least. So, did we have any other final thoughts on the film?
Well, there is. There is a little bit of presence in the parks. It's not big. Mm-hmm. I mean, Disney's California Adventure, you'll have characters walking around. Animal Kingdom, there'll be appearances, but no attractions. I mean, it's kind of hard to put these characters in some kind of attraction, I think, because you look at the parks in Florida, you know, Magic Kingdom. I mean, they are expanding. So there is a chance that you could see some things. I mean, I don't think Brother Bear's really been talked about. There are films like Zootopia, Encanto, Villains. Those are the things that really we're going to start seeing probably sooner than later. They just opened a Frozen Land in Hong Kong. They're opening Zootopia, I think, in Tokyo. I would kill to have that attraction here stateside. But it's, you know, I don't really think there's a place for it in the Magic Kingdom. In Epcot, you know, you would think they would go in Canada, but no, this film actually takes place in Alaska. You just have, you know, Rut and Took with their Canadian accents because, you know, they migrate. Animals are migratory.
Well, they share a border.
Yeah. I mean, there are some, like I said, Animal Kingdom, there may be some presence there. There is a North America section, but I don't think this really lends itself to a ride, but it definitely getting the characters though to walk around. And Little John also from Robin Hood, that's another bear. So yes, there is so many bears.
There's a meet and greet, a Brother Bear meet and greet they have, Kenai and Coda. I'm seeing it's posted still as recently as a year ago. And I had something I don't know if they do anymore, but they have a totem, or they did have a totem ceremony. It looks like that's specifically in California. At the California Adventure.
Yeah. Well, California has the, you know, bears are like a more of a symbol in California. So that was like in the original California Adventure before it got kind of their revamping, I guess, a number of years ago, it was yeah, they had like the Grizzly Bear Run, I think was the I think the water ride. I've never been to that California Adventure, so, but I could definitely see where this may have a better chance at being a presence over there. But of course, they have Animal Kingdom, a whole damn park devoted to animals. So I mean, they should have the them walk around, and it could also be, you know, there are rare characters. And people do seek them out, like, oh, I've never had a picture with this character. So the Brother Bear, if you want to, you know, have your bingo card filled, you're mm-hmm. going to be looking for Kenai and Coda. So.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, like you guys said, this film is, you know, it has its moments, but they don't, there's not enough there to like get it up to the next level of those films that we've talked about before. So, for the time it came out, it was fine. It's a good kind of breeze. You know, it moves too. It's like nothing really drags. It, you know, breezes through the hour and a half. So it is ultimately a fine film. I don't know if I can say the same about the next film that we're going to talk about for our next episode. It will be kind of interesting as we are going to transition from the Great White North to the Wild Wild West. And no, I'm not talking about the Will Smith film, though. Honestly, I might want to talk that. I probably want to talk about that film other than this film.
That's not good either.
You shut your dirty mouth. That's fantastic.
She's saying so, my dear.
Well, that's a subject for another time. But our next episode, we are going to be talking about the film Home on the Range, which...
we'll just say it right now, Miranda and I appreciate Steve falling on the sword and sitting in the quasi host chair for this episode.
Yeah, let's put it this way. This I think is the absolute like nadir for Disney, because after this we do start to climb back up after this. So but we'll talk about that. Obviously,
things are going to get worse before they get better. Is that what you're trying to say, Steve?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. That's just how the cookie crumbles. Like, it's bad to get good.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, like I said, once we get through this, then it's then the next couple films after it is going to be very good. So, we are looking forward to that. So, but with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Let's talk about where everyone can find us in terms of social media and what we've got going on in terms of other pods. So, Andy, we'll start with you.
I don't do much on the other socials besides the Facebook, so you can look for me, but you ain't going to see much on the Twitter or the Instagram. But in terms of pods, you know, life has gotten in the way with pod loads, but trying to get back into it, you know, the Blockbuster rewatch. I have the next episode will be Star Wars Episode 3, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. Actually, sorry, Revenge of the Sith. And I'll be joined by James Gruenberg on that episode. May look to, you know, start doing some Laughing Theaters, the cartoon pod, which, you know, I have my next guest. Unfortunately, our schedules have not lined up. And the comics pod hopefully will come back sooner than later. And yeah, just check out what we have here on the thing we call the PlayStation Pop Experience and the Video Jukebox Song of the Day. Steve, Keithy, and I are pretty much doing the everything there on, that's every weekday, and we do every other week as a theme week, and check us out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Miranda?
I'm pretty much only here. I am only here podcast-wise on Place to Be Pop Feed. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok at Mom's a Nerd. Join the Facebook group, the Place to Be Facebook group. We're all three in there. Lots of great content, lots of things for everything, for everyone. Because if you didn't know, this podcast is a member of Place to Be Nation. Just, you know, reminder, if you didn't know. Just throwing that out there. I think, yeah, my brain is not braining, so, yeah. That's where I'm at. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, as for me, like Andy said, I am part of the Video Jukebox Song of the Day, so that's been going really strong. I also am over on the PTB Wrestling feed. Me and James Grunberg have Extreme Resurrection, where we're going through ECW from 2006 to 2010. We're currently in the fall of 2007, coming out of SummerSlam. We just discussed the two episodes where CM Punk finally won the ECW title from John Morrison. That was, of course, on the heels of the Signature Pharmacy scandal that had broken around that time. Of course, Morrison was one of the casualties of it, so he had to drop the belt and go on a 30-day suspension. So now we'll see how Punk runs the rest of the year as the champion. Looking forward to that. Also, you can I've been appearing over on the North South Connection YouTube channel. They're currently going through their series where we are counting down the top 40 greatest WrestleMania performers of all time. I've already appeared on two episodes there. I discussed the case for Owen Hart being number 36 along with Tim Slomka, and I also was on for episode for number 28 where me and Richie Mars discussed Cody Rhodes being ranked there. So be sure to keep following that. Lots of great that's going strong. Of course, Ryan and JT, they're counting down all the WrestleMania matches. They're about in the top 50, so we're getting down to the wire here with the best of the best. With them talking about that. And just be sure, if you have not yet, please subscribe to the North South YouTube channel. Besides the WrestleMania content, there's a lot of great other great content that those guys pump out over there, so be sure to follow along with that. And of course, PTB Facebook group, if anything pops up there, you know, that's usually where you'll hear it, so lots of good stuff there. Keep watching out for that. And again, thank you again for joining us here on this episode. For Miranda Berthold and Andy Atherton, I am Steve Riddle. This, of course, was Pop Goes the Classics here on the Pop Experience, and we will see you next time.